I'd be rich.
Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, bringing you the latest in local and regional news in collaboration with our partner media outlets. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie, covering a story on a new study on key factors that contribute to increased demand for pediatric urgent care in Kingston.
A recent study led by researchers from Kingston Health Sciences Center, the Kingston General Health Research Institute, and Queen's University has uncovered some of the factors contributing to the rising demand for pediatric urgent care in the Kingston area. The research, led by Dr. Daniel Mulder, a pediatrician at KHSC and assistant professor at Queen's, used urgent care data from KHSC's Children's Outpatient Clinic, tracking pediatric urgent care visits from 2006 to 2022. Since the mid-2010s, there has been a significant increase in demand for pediatric urgent care, putting added pressure on health teams. To provide us with deeper insights into the surge in urgent care visits and what they mean for our health system, CFRC was joined by Dr. Mulder. Here is a bit of our conversation. Your research was to get to the bottom of the increase in demand for pediatric urgent care. What was the scale of this increase in demand, and how did it contribute to the pressures on our health system that we've been seeing over the last few years?
Yeah, so we were worried because we're seeing more and more demand for urgent care for children here in Kingston. And we were really concerned that, you know, this was a multifactorial problem. We were suspicious that there were a few specific issues driving this. So we looked at the data over the past, you know, decade and a half and found there was quite the increase, as we thought. But some of the interesting pieces that we found that were not as obvious were that visits were lasting quite a bit longer. You know, so if you do the math, you take the number of visits increasing over time, and then you add in that each visit is longer and the amount of care delivered each day is increased quite a bit. So then we said, well, what could there be that, you know, would be driving that change, and what's changing in society, you know? And we can only really analyze the data we have. And so we looked at the data, which was quite rich. And we saw that, you know, over time, we were seeing more patients with infections, which isn't that obvious. I think, you know, thinking back to 2019, right? But after COVID hit and, you know, we saw lots and lots of patients with COVID, we knew that this was driving demand, but we actually see that increased demand for children with infections coming to urgent care has increased maybe probably 2017, 2018. So it actually happened before COVID that we were seeing a lot more kids with infections. We also see much more patients without a primary care provider. So without a family doctor or nurse practitioner, you know, seeing them regularly doing healthcare check-ins, these kind of things. So these patients tend to be a bit sicker and tend to then come to need urgent care, you know, in much higher proportions when they don't have a family doctor or someone like that supporting them. And then finally, we saw that the patients had increasing complexity. So we see this as pediatricians, but, you know, people on the street may not sort of appreciate this change, is that over time, we're getting better and better at treating complicated conditions with more and more equipment. And so we're much more likely to see children with complications of feeding tubes, breathing apparatuses that they need, wheelchairs, these kind of things that are going along. And often patients have more than one piece of technology supporting their life. And so when those things stop working, they come to urgent care. And so we're seeing more of that. So these things all added together, the increase in infections, the decrease in primary care access, and the increase in complexity of the patients, to mean that visits are more frequent and they're lasting longer, and that's driving this demand. So that was very helpful, I think, to find that information out.
Yeah, for sure. And you mentioned, I think a lot of people think of this as sort of a COVID thing, but you mentioned this sort of started accelerating in the mid-2010s. I was wondering if you could speak to some of the reasoning behind that, why we were seeing more complex cases and more infections during that time period to now.
Yeah, that's a great question. So the data only tells us really what we can pull out of the urgent care visits. And so in terms of why we're seeing increased infections, this is not clear to us. And we want to look into this more because, you know, there's a few possible reasons. It could be just an increase in circulating infections in society sort of overall. It could be that, you know, we're seeing more and more patients coming to urgent care with coughs and colds because they maybe don't have a family doctor or someone to check in with, you know, so they're coming to urgent care for visits that, you know, coughs and colds that would go normally to their family doctor, but they don't have a family doctor. So then they come see us and that drives the demand as well. So that was probably happening prior to 2020 and COVID. And then the complexity issue is a challenging one because, you know, we're getting better at treating patients, which is wonderful, right? We're mm-hmm. getting more technologies available. We're keeping patients well and out of hospital more, which is wonderful. But that means that those patients at home need care and they're complicated. And so they come to see a pediatrician at the urgent care center rather than, you know, going to their family doctor potentially or to the emergency department.
And what kind of solutions do you foresee for this kind of issue?
So, you know, this is a resource planning issue, I think, you know, and really the goal of pediatrics and healthcare in general, when it comes to children, you know, is to raise healthy kids. And this is a much better thing for everyone, not just the patient, but society in general, if we raise healthy kids rather than try to treat sick adults, you know. And so we're trying to find ways that we can help the people who, you know, distribute resources for healthcare make decisions. So, you know, we've identified these factors and we think that targeting those as early as possible would be best, right? So we're looking for ways to decrease circulating infections, ways to better support complex patients, you know, who absolutely need to see pediatricians when things go wrong, when they're not feeling well. You know, these patients need access to pediatricians and also access to primary care for most children, if not all children, right? So we think that this is probably a great way to prevent these increased burdens on urgent care centers and emergency departments is to have primary care access to for children. And this is something that, you know, it's not news, but now we have data to support it and data from our local region to support that this need is there. And so I think these patients are going to be the best way to solve this increased demand problem.
I know you're thinking about doing more research across Ontario and perhaps across Canada. Have you seen similar studies done in other regions, or will this sort of be new in a bigger way?
Yeah, we are very lucky as Canadians to have this semi-centralized healthcare system, right? So, mm-hmm. You know, regardless of your sort of political stance and your thoughts on where, why, and how our healthcare system should be built, we have the data from the healthcare system in a fairly centralized way. And so, you know, when I talk to other pediatric researchers in the US, they're very jealous of the data set we have. The system just isn't centralized there. And we think this problem of increased demand and decreased primary care access is happening all over the world. So there's data from the UK and there's data from the US, especially thus far, to support that this is an ongoing issue across the board. And there's many systemic problems with, you know, healthcare resources. It's a limited pool of resources and an increasing demand over time as our population gets more complex and we are getting better at treating and we have larger populations. And so looking at the data for Ontario, I think will be the next big step. We don't have that data yet, but it will be fairly straightforward to do this research because the structure of the data we looked at from our urgent care center is going to be the same as the data structured from other centers. And so expanding this research, I won't, you know, be an overnight solution that we can find, but we will be able to look at the large set of data once we get access in a fairly similar way. And so that will be helpful. And we think that we'll find the same trends across the board, as that's what we're hearing in the news. That's what we're seeing in, you know, government reports, that there's increased demand across the board, not just for children, but hopefully our expanded work will be able to show some of the factors that are doing that, you know, in making this change and driving this demand.
That was Dr. Daniel Mulder with KHSC sharing key insights from his team's recent study on the increase in pediatric urgent care demand in Kingston. For those interested in exploring the study further, you can read it in the PLOS Digital Health Journal. This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
And thank you to Chris Laurie right here at CFRC 101.9 FM. Coming up now, we have a story by Local Journalism Initiative reporter Keith Dempsey of the Brockville Recorder and Times on new water infrastructure funding for the town of Gananoque. The provincial government recently announced $5.77 million in water infrastructure funding, which will help enable the construction of 416 new homes in Gananoque. Leeds, Grenville, Thousand Islands, and Rideau Lakes MPP Steve Clark was joined on Thursday, August 22nd, by Minister of Infrastructure Kinga Surma and Gananoque Mayor John Beddoes to announce the funding, which is being delivered through the first round of investments under the Housing Enabling Water Systems Fund. They were joined by local councillors David Osmond, Anne-Marie Coyner, Vicky Leakey, town staff, and some residents and workers. The press conference took place at the corner of Stone Street and Ash Alley in Gananoque. The funding announced will support upgrades to the Gananoque East End Pumping Station, enabling the construction of 416 housing units in the town. "Behind us right now are men and women invest," said Beddoes, pointing to the workers standing off in the background on Thursday's presser. "They're the people who actually do the work. This investment is going to mean they don't have to stand in wet, cold holes in the ground at 3 a.m. in January. MPP Clark said housing is a priority for the people the provincial government represents, and I commend Mayor Beddoes and the town of Gananoque for their work on this project, said Clark. "By investing in drinking water and wastewater treatment facilities and connecting pipes to land, municipalities can build more homes," Minister Surma said. "Homes can't be built without connections to drinking water and wastewater," he went on. Beddoes said Thursday's announcement was proof of where provincial tax dollars go back to and proof of Queen's Park's commitment to support housing construction across the province and in municipalities of every size. "The province doesn't just take our taxes," said Mayor Beddoes. "It puts it where it's needed. We needed it. We got it." Thank you to Keith Dempsey of the Brockville Recorder and Times for that story. Coming up next, we have a story by Jeff Gard, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN-FM in Cobourg, on Northumberland County's continued work with encampment members facing eviction.
With an expected announcement forthcoming regarding the sale of the former Brookside Youth Detention Center property in Cobourg, which is provincially owned, Northumberland County staff say the plan is to continue offering support to encampment members if they are evicted. The former youth detention center is at 390 King Street East, and the encampment has been set up on a portion of the 30-acre property since last September. The official number of encampment members is unclear, but Deputy Warden and Port Hope Mayor Olena Hankiewski referenced there being 25 at the August meeting of Northumberland County Council. Manager of Homelessness Services Bill Smith and Associate Director of Housing and Homelessness Rebecca Carman spoke to County Council at its August meeting after Council had requested an encampment response plan as part of a homelessness report which previously didn't have one. The report states the county is pushing forward with an expedited opening of the new shelter at 310 Division Street in Cobourg to replace Transition House around the corner on Chapel Street. The increased shelter space will include room for approximately 35 individuals and a year-round drop-in center available 24 hours a day. Staff have also previously indicated there will be shower and locker facilities, as well as social services staff, on site. Should encampment members be evicted from the Brookside property, the new shelter at 310 Division will be one option for shelter depending on space. The capacity is around 35 spaces. The county also pays for space at local motels and hotels. Smith said social service workers have met with members since the encampment was first set up last September.
When we're talking about responding to Brookside, the immediate crisis concerns for those who want to engage in supports is evident when we are now getting more calls that somebody wants to talk to someone at social services and we're able to respond immediately. There's lots of diversion options happening. We're returning folks to their family. We're getting people into emergency shelter or returning them to housing. And we're also having conversations about food insecurity and connecting with meal programs and food banks.
Carmen said it should be recognized that an encampment response is multifaceted.
There's no one agency or one individual that could solve this alone. We need a coordinated community response with support from systems that have compounded our response, including social assistance, justice, mental health and addictions, and the lack of affordable housing options in our community and throughout the province.
County Councillor and Cobourg Mayor Lucas Cleveland said the work being done by those on the front line can't be overstated and is appreciated for the challenges they face day to day. But he also said he was confused by what the actual encampment response plan is, which Carmen addressed.
The plan is to continue to provide response. People have to lead their housing journey. People get to make choices of where they may want to go. Our plan is to open up 310 division as soon as possible so that we can increase our capacity to serve more people. We continue to ensure we have additional motel spaces to support folks who would like to come into the system. Our outreach staff and partners are there multiple times a week to have those conversations, meet people where they're at, and continue to support them moving forward. If we receive notice that it's being enforced, we will work alongside folks at the encampment to navigate housing options and shelter options for them to move on.
County Warden Brian Ostrander, the mayor of Brighton, acknowledged staff had to clear one previous encampment that was set up on county property, but noted the normal role is not to clear encampments, but to help provide social services to the individuals. The warden turned his attention back to the Brookside property.
I would have anticipated the property owner would have sought to try to deal with this issue in advance of wanting to sell their property, but that's not a county responsibility. The property is owned by currently the province of Ontario, and we'll have to see what the new property owner chooses to do, I suppose. And we will be there to help serve people who are displaced as best we can.
Deputy Warden Olena Hankiewski asked Smith if there's enough shelter space available to meet any surge that could happen in the near future.
Unfortunately, there's no way of knowing because it really is whether or not individuals want to engage, want more services, want to potentially have to leave Cobourg to stay in a motel in other places because there's only so many hotel spaces available. It would be more acting in a emergency type response to individuals who are asking for support.
Hankiewski asked how many additional spaces the county can secure in the area at this time.
So unfortunately, there's no way of knowing because we don't have any timing available. So hotels and motels are at higher capacity during the summer months. But I could call today and there'd be 20 spots available. That doesn't mean that they're available for next week.
Hankiewski asked Smith for clarification, wondering what resources have been set aside to ensure there's enough space where they have availability, and asked if there's space and flexibility if people want to enter the system.
We do in the short term, and then we would have to look for follow-up funding, pull from other programming. These are a lot of what-ifs, and it will be that quick response in the moment to get people safe in the moment and continue to work with them on what their next steps are.
Reporting for CFWN, Northumberland 89.7 FM, and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Jeff Gard.
And thank you to Jeff Gard of CFWN for that story. Coming up now, we have a story by LJI reporter for CJPE County FM in Picton on new opportunities to see the iconic World War II era Lancaster bomber.
Base 31 in Picton will have a new museum that will be opening in 2025, and curator Madeline Smolars is creating it from the ground up. But in the meantime, two opportunities have been added for the public to come and view the Lancaster KB-882. The original unveiling in June was so successful that Labor Day and Thanksgiving weekends have been recently added to allow people to view the restored World War II bomber. It sits in the original Hangar 1 and is on loan from the National Air Force Museum of Canada. It'll remain at Base 31 until 2029, when it will return to Trenton. The new 27,000 square foot museum will be built as part of the original hangar and will house all kinds of artifacts, information boards, uniforms, and interactive displays. But the star of the show will be the Lancaster KB882. It has been painstakingly restored by a team of volunteers who continue to monitor the condition of the plane. The No. 31 Training and Gunnery School, or Camp Picton, as it became known, was one of over 200 similar training bases built across Canada in 1940 to quickly train soldiers for active duty in World War II. The base sat dormant for decades, but is now coming to life with many new endeavors, including the museum. I spoke with curator Madeline Smolars about her experience so far, the museum, and the Lancaster KB882.
As the museum curator, I'm the first person in my job, so I have a really unique opportunity to build my work from the ground up. Not only the Future Base 31 Museum, of course, which is the main reason why I was hired, was to create that, but as a curator, to learn and research as much as I can about the very long history of this place, and then figure out ways that I can share and teach that to people. I think of this place as one huge open-air museum. That is something that struck me as soon as I set foot here for the first time. Every building, honestly, every rock has a story of the people who have come through here, walked the same places that people walk today, and is very worthy of interpreting and preserving for the future. It makes it more real when it is tangible and right in front of you and you can touch it. Our example of something like that is our target wall. That is the wall that when this site was number 31 bombing and gunnery school, trainees would taxi airplanes up to and practice gunning. And so we actually have that target wall still on site where all of those bullet holes are still present and visible. And then throughout the rest of the site as well, every building that we have successfully restored that you were able to enter, you know, you are walking the exact same halls and looking at the same walls that people did when this site was first built in 1940. It's transportive. So we have on loan from the National Air Force Museum of Canada, Lancaster Bomber KB882. I like to call it Rabbit Stew sometimes because that was the airplane's nickname in World War II. And for every mission that she flew alongside the Nose Art, which was a rabbit in a pot, the crew would paint one carrot. So for every mission, I believe in total, she flew either 11 or 12. There was a carrot painted on side. So we have Rabbit Stew until the end of 2029 when she'll go back to the Air Force Museum. And between now and when the Base 31 Museum opens next year, we wanted to make it available to people because otherwise it is sitting alone in hangar number one. So over the Canada Day long weekend, we did our first Lancaster Bomber preview event. That was so well received by people who came through, whether they were an infant or whether they had been on Earth for a long time. There was something for everybody, and everyone enjoyed it so much that we decided to do it two more times. I've now started to call them Lancaster long weekends. So on the Labor Day long weekend, in about a week and a half from the time of this interview, Hangar 1 will be open again Saturday, Sunday, and Monday from 10 to 5. Walk-ups are more than welcome, and people will be able to get inside, see the aircraft, and also engage with over a dozen different activity and exhibition stations that have been created in the space. So we already had things set up such as a listening station where you can hear stories about the site from people who have experienced different things here, where you can watch heritage moments, which were created by Peter Lockyer and History Lives Here, a local business, where you can play a life-size board game to learn what it took to become an airman. But also, we've added a couple of new things, too. Some large artifacts have been moved into the space, and a little museum pop-up has been created.
Now, you also have this happening Thanksgiving weekend, I understand.
Exactly. So that is the third and final Lancaster Long Weekend of 2024. And again, it'll be Saturday, Sunday, Monday, 10 to 5. So for those who maybe live in the county and have visitors, it's going to be an excellent activity. What is so special, I feel, about the particular location is not just the fact that we have this incredibly grand plane that has such a presence to it, but that it is a original World War II hangar built in 1940. The atmosphere is unlike anything you'll find anywhere else. Base 31 is the last British Commonwealth Air Training Plan site standing to this extent of the 231 that were all built in 1940. So this is something that Prince Edward County, this is a place that Prince Edward County can be so proud of in showing off and also exploring as well whenever they feel like it. Our doors are open.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
And thanks to Brenda Little of County FM in Picton for that story. Up next, we have a story by Ted Evans, LJI reporter for CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, on Lennox and Addington Studio Tour hosting live music for the first time.
The L&A Studio Tour takes place this year, September 7th and 8th, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. each day. This will be the first time studios are hosting live music along with the event. The L&A Studio Tour gives participants the chance to meet artists in their studios and homes, learn about their artistic process, and purchase new artwork from the artists. The event features over 32 artists located in 17 studios throughout the county. The L&A Studio Tour is a self-guided tour leading through rural areas with historic towns, villages, and hamlets. Amanda Lloyd, one of the owners of the Hive Artist Collective in Bath, notes the four members they'll be featuring in their studio.
The L&A Studio Tour is really cool. So they have over 30 artists a part of that program. And so only four of the Hive members will be showing in our gallery. So you'll really get a chance to see a little bit more from myself, Amanda Lloyd, David Slack, Lisa Leskin, and Shannon Dickey.
Lloyd describes the rest of the weekend and where to find other artists in the county.
The rest of the tour, you'll be able to see other Hive artists and in their actual studios and other artists, local artists in their studios from Napanee and from Amherst View, Bath. It's a really, really cool, fun weekend to kind of take a local adventure.
Lloyd notes some of the fun activities happening in the studios throughout the tour.
You get to meet the artists, and all of them have different cool things running in their studios, like little raffles and giveaways. And a lot of the studios have music. We have music all day, which is really cool for both days, Saturday and Sunday.
Lloyd describes the welcoming nature of artists in their studios.
All the artists just love chatting about their art. So it's always fun to have people come in and we get a chance to talk to the community and get to know us, and we just want to share. That's all we want to do.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Tad Evans.
And now it's time for the CFRC Environment Canada Weather Report. Tonight we'll have clear skies with winds becoming south at 30 kilometers an hour, gusting to 50 this evening with a low of 16. Friday, a mix of sun and cloud with a high of 25. Friday night, cloudy with a 40% chance of showers and a low of 16. On Saturday, we'll have showers with a high of 18 and cloudy with a 60% chance of showers and a low of 9 on Saturday night. And on Sunday, we'll have cloudy periods with a 40% chance of showers and a high of 16. And Sunday night, cloudy with a 30% chance of showers and a low of 11. Thank you for tuning into The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. We'll see you next time.
Folk Everything is your passport to the finest in folk music. Old, new, and everything in between. The wonderful, the wild, and the weird.
He won't bother you. He's a busy man. has got things to do.
It's all here Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. Folk Everything with Hugh on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston.
Did you know that alcohol is a leading risk factor for disease, disability, and premature death in Canada? Alcohol can lead to both short and serious long-term health risks. Learn more about risks to your health and safe use of alcohol by visiting publichealthontario.ca.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! This is CFRC 101.9 FM, www.cfrc.ca, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. My name is Cindy. This is Absolutely Frivolous. Yes, I'm back again. I almost didn't make it in today. It's been a crazy busy day. I totally enjoy being here and being on the air, and I'm hoping I can keep doing it forever. Look, I'll just put that out there. I know I'm probably jinxing myself and the universe will go, ha ha, because you wanted it, it won't happen. But honestly, I could do this forever. I really enjoy being here at the station. I mean, I enjoy seeing the people and I enjoy the different stuff that happens here at the station too. So we've always got different things going on. Right in front of me is the list of the Gales football live broadcast all season. If you are a football fan, Jesse Bell and Zayden Vergara will be hosting that every Saturday and play the actual matches live on the air and talk about them, I'm assuming. So I assume that's what's going to happen. I don't know. They're going to be, so the Queen's Gael is going to be playing York this Saturday. And it looks like at 3 p.m. we will be broadcasting that football game. It'll be fun. I don't know. There's other fun stuff that's happening here at the station or here in Kingston in area. If you go to cfrc.ca, there's a really great events calendar on Friday. Tomorrow, different things are happening. There's going to be a fresh food market at the YMCA starting at 9:30. There's a queer Muslim collective and they're hosting a casual social event at 99 York Street. Of course, there's Rib Fest this weekend. If you like your ribs, you might want to go. And I've already told some of my friends, but if you go to their website, which sadly I don't have handy, but if you go to Rib Fest Kingston, there is a $3 off coupon for $20 of ribs, a rack of ribs, I guess, which are usually around $20. So yeah, I'm going. I'm looking forward to it. Because I like ribs. The 7th, they are going to have a sidewalk sale on University Avenue here on Queen's campus. Come by the CFRC's booth. And there'll be hundreds of other local businesses, campus clubs, and all sorts of things happening about campus activities and how to maybe make your dorm room a little fancier. I don't know if you like doing that thing. Also on Saturday from 9 to 5, you can go to the Memorial Center for the Ethiopian New Year Festival, showcasing coffee ceremonies, cultural plays, traditional food, and more. Yeah, I might check that out, actually. That sounds very cool. And on September 8th, Sunday, the Memorial Center Farmers Market is open from 9 to 2, and it is a wonderful place. Oh, it was so nice on the long weekend. So many dogs. And there was even a couple that was walking their cats. So, you know, even if you don't like people, the animals that come to the market are amazing. And it's just so wonderful to see them. And rarely do we have anybody like getting a little sassy with each other. Let's just put it that way. There is also the Ovarian Cancer Walk of Hope that takes place from 9 to noon on September 9th. And that's going to be at Lake Ontario Park. So lots of things happening. Please head on down to enjoy this weekend, especially if you're new to Kingston. I know there's a lot of students that are new here, RMC, St. Lawrence, Queens. Check out Kingston, especially now while the weather's still great, and you'll have a good time. Although I heard it was going to rain on the weekend, so who knows? I don't know what's happening anymore because it could change like the next hour. So let's play some comedy, shall we? I have Jeff Akuri, who's very funny. I just love him. I had to do a lot of bleeping, so if I missed anything, I apologize. I'm not here to offend. I did my very best. And if any of the topics are offensive, again, you know, we're not here at CFRC to offend anyone. We apologize if you are. But, you know, if you enjoy his humor, you will enjoy this for sure. And then I've got later on, I've got some Clem Chesterfield, and I might, if there's time, play a song by Beck called Satan Gave Me a Taco. Here we go. Here's Jeff Akuri on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Oh, never mind. I think I would have just let it go right there. What do you do?
I work for a railroad.
Railroad?
Yeah.
Holy shit. Okay, hell yeah. Well, he runs trains too. Clap if you're uncircumcised here. Hey! You are right here? I know where the penis is. He's like, I get it, dude. That'd be weird if you're like, yeah, I'm uncircumcised. What the f***? That's cool, man. I almost didn't see you with all that camouflage. That's sick, dude. Do you work in hunting or something? You just like camo?
Recently terminated.
Recently terminated?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Really? Why?
Free agent now.
You're a free agent. What do you do?
I have violated corporate policy.
You violated corporate policy. Wow, man. You're saying terminated and I violated corporate policy. What the hell? What? I didn't know that vape shops had corporate policy. Oh, dude. I thought it, said it, and I was praying you guys laughed. If you see his face, you'd get it. You'd see it. You're the type of guy, if I walk in, you're like, what can I get you, my dude? You got a, yeah, Indica Sativa, that's sick. You do have a fun-ass vibe, though, man. What kind of job was it?
Is that a spray tech?
Spray tech.
Yeah. Spraying lawns and trees.
Spraying lawns. Oh, greenery and stuff like that. Oh, that's cool. Okay, hell yeah, man. All right, that's awesome. All right, well, why did I start this conversation? Oh, circumcised. Your dick. Yeah. What'd you get for your birthday?
A rose.
A rose? Oh, wow. From like a homeless person?
I get to see your show.
You get to see my show? Oh, I'm your present. Okay. Do it. What the f***?
Happy birthday.
I'm not gay. Why? This is why people think. Some comics get a dope beat, and then for me, he's like, and I'm like, would you like to get a drink after this? My name is Jeff, and I'm here to say my mom loves me, and my dad thinks I'm gay. I just made that up. That's pretty good. Oh, no. You were clapping the whole time. I saw you. You're OG. Oh, I had a Red Bull late in the day. It's a red flag for you, honestly.
If they're a snacker. Yeah.
Okay. Hold on. Just a bunch of bros eating fried. What's wrong with that? You want to clarify? Yeah, I'm going to let you clarify. Clarify. What do you mean by that?
Make a meal.
Oh, okay, cool. But what if I have a grab a handful of almonds? You going to be a big about it? Those are healthy. Unsalted, baby. Live and let live. Okay, that's not what you said a few seconds ago. I'm kidding. But I get it. I guess if what if they're really in shape and they snag? You don't like that? It's okay. You know what? That was fun.
You guys here together?
Brothers.
Nice, man. You got like a silver tooth? I don't mean to point it out, but that's f***ing, it's hard because the light's hitting it. You know? Right up front, you got a silver tooth, dude. Your girlfriend or your wench? You know? I'm sorry. But every now and then, I get like a hit in the eye with a shimmer. And I had to address it. That's cool. That's a cool choice to go with because you got the tattoos and to go with it too. It's a what?
It was a joke.
It was a joke?
My job made me cut my hair, so as a report, I've cut my hair, ripped my tooth out, and got a gold tooth.
Wow, where do you work?
I was a firefighter.
You were a firefighter. That's so great. And then your job was like, cut your hair. And you're like, I'll do that. And they're like, we need this guy in every building. I want to light a fire in my hotel and be like, get gold tooth. That sounds like a villain in James Bond. You're a firefighter too?
Yeah, I just make pornography.
Are you serious? You make porn? Where are you doing this?
Patreon.
Patreon. Oh, wow. Yeah. That's okay. You make, you just like throwing butthole out there? Or what are you doing? I'm sorry. This doesn't happen a lot. This is for me. I mean, the fact that I was like, what are you? He's like, I'm a firefighter. He's like, porn is what you want to hear. You're goddamn right, dude. It's my favorite show.
I write like erotica.
You write erotica. Yeah. Oh, you don't pose nude?
No, no.
Okay, all right. No, it's okay. It's fine. Fuck on camera. Fuck on. We got three cameras set up here. Get up here. Let's turn that book into a live action. What's one of your favorite plots?
Oh, I want to get into that.
You don't want to get into it? Well, here's the reason I want to. And I'm sorry to say, Ia brought it up. Give me, like, the plot of one of your favorites, like, that you've written.
Babysitter porn.
Babysitter porn? Wow. I don't know if you know him or you're just the guy who yelled out his kink. Who the is the pedophile in the third row over here? Jesus. It's probably babysitter porn. Right? Like the thing we all look for? Right? This club isn't near a school. Right? I'm kidding, man. I'm kidding. But also, you yelled out. Free game. Yeah, okay. You've had time to think now. What's your favorite? Like, what's the plot? What's the... It did. Oh, yeah. You think I'm gonna let this go? What you're doing, dude, fighting fires for us? You quit? Oh, so you all that for nothing. What are you gonna do now?
I own an arcade bar.
You own an arcade bar. You guys are the coolest dudes I've ever met. You James drove 6 hours to see me? Oh, thanks so much, man. Thank you. That's really sweet. All right, well, you know, yeah, I'll get you a drink.
That's... I'll buy you a drink.
Okay. Hi. Yeah, I'll start a fire. I don't know. Anybody here got their whole thing? Yeah? Oh, the boys! Let's get you out of here. Look like a fire hose. You make a video game, and then it does it turn into porn?
It does turn into
porn. Wow. Okay. So far, I like this. I like video games and porn so much. If you could combine those two worlds, I will get off the road and stay at home.
CFRC.
You guys will see me 45 pounds heavier coming out of a room. Like, what year is it? I won, but I also lost so much. Sorry, but I think we all just heard Connie have her big O. Even her husband was like, what the fuck was that? I'm kidding. I'm sorry, sir. I can't tell if he's smiling. I can't look over there anymore. Good for you for following your dreams, because that's... I didn't know I could do that. I just do this. So what's the video? What was the plot? Did you find it?
It's about a half woman, half dolphin who...
Are you serious? Okay. Jesus. I was going to say, I got your perfect voice actor. Is that your husband? Oh, really? How long have you been married?
35 years.
Really? And let me ask you, sir. Has it been... 35 years of that? What?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. You okay, man? You know what? Give his drinks to him. I bet you he used to be funny, and then he's like, I can't do that anymore.
Good day, dude. What did you do today, man? That's right. You did a lot. Did you do mushrooms? You said shrooms? Are you guys on mushrooms right now? That's so good. It's so f***ed up. It's so f***ed up. I hope you're about to fall asleep tonight. And you're like, holy shit, you're on mushrooms drinking beer right now? One of your buttons is undone. You don't even know about that. Holy shit. Good thing your phones are locked up. You ever look at your phone on mushrooms? You're like, oh, cool. This is melting. This is awesome. That's great, man. I remember my buddy and I, we used to do mushrooms every year on the beach. We'd go on the beach at night in Chicago and do mushrooms, and he would always pull us over and look and be like, hey, boys, come here, come here. And he'd always put his arms around us, and we'd look at the stars. And about 30% of the times when he did that, he would just start peeing when he had... So we'd be looking up, and we'd hear just a puddle forming, and then we look over, and he's like, eh.
Veterinarian.
Oh, hell yeah, dude. That's really cool. What was your range of animals? What was like the weirdest animal you ever fixed?
The weirdest?
Yeah.
King cobra.
King cobra. What'd you do to it?
Chemo.
Chemotherapy out of a snake? My God. Just don't fix it. Send it back to hell. What the f***? Holy s***. When it was done, did it ring a bell and shit? Snake on chemo, yo. Just let it die, bro. I wish I had something funny for that. I'm gonna be on the way home and be like, oh, I should have done a hiss joke or something, you know? Yeah, at the end of each appointment, was it like, thanks? Yeah, good enough. It's good enough. No. That's now, it feels low for us. Thank you so much. Thanks so much. That's cool, man. So you're a doctor, dude. That's really cool. Good for you. Went to college for that. You went to college for, where'd you go to college? Like normal? I think my ignorance is showing right now. Did you go to a normal school or was like a horse in front of the class? Like, hello! Today we're learning about chemo. This isn't that funny, but you guys are just a good crowd. I'll be honest. You're doing most of the heavy lifting on my set right now.
CFRC 101.9 FM is so thrilled to announce the launch of our brand new accessible website at cfrc.ca. Get your local news, stream your favorite shows, and stay up to date with upcoming events. You can share news tips, book a recording studio, request a PSA for airplay, and oh so much more. CFRC.ca was made possible through the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada and our amazing funding drive donors. Thank you so much.
Did you recognize that sound? That's the sound of a healthy, well-cared-for cat. I truly hope you've been lucky enough to hear that sound before. The feral cat population around Kingston and the surrounding areas has grown considerably over the last few years. And thanks to organizations like Kendra's Community Kitties, these feral cats are being fed, medically cared for, spayed, neutered, flea-treated, dewormed, given winter shelters, and placed in loving homes whenever possible.
Hundreds of these special animals have been rescued by Kendra, and many of these wonderful felines are purring right now, safe and healthy.
But rescuing and rehoming feral cats isn't easy. It requires an enormous amount of time and effort, and there are a few ways you can help.
You can donate to Kendra's Community Kitties on their website, kckitties.com. Even a small amount will help pay for medication, spay and neutering procedures, and food and supplies to keep these felines sheltered and healthy in the cold winters or extreme heat of the summer. Because some of these kitties are not socialized, Kendra has committed herself to provide 22 dishes of food with fresh water every day, 365 days a year, to 6 feral colonies. Food prices have increased significantly, so donations of food and money are always needed. Funding assists with the process of finding homes for these cats as well, as it takes time and money to find the right individual or family to be matched with the right kind of cat. You can become a foster family for our feline friends. Go to kckitties.com and learn how you can care for and love a cat or even a family of kittens until they can be moved into their forever homes. At the colonies, Kendra plants the seeds of trust and socializes the feral felines when she brings them food at the same time each and every single day. So they're more accepting of humans when placed with foster families. But fostering a feral cat is no easy task. Kendra cannot take these cats from the colonies unless there are foster homes willing to commit to help these kitties gain trust with humans.
You can adopt one of these special cats or kittens. If you've already been thinking of getting a furry friend, reach out to Kendra at kckitties.com and she'll provide you with all the information you need to make this important decision.
In help you can offer Kendra's community kitties will be tremendously appreciated. Not only by Kendra, but by the lucky feral felines to rescue.
And hey, maybe, just maybe, one day you'll get to hear
Panda say I love you.
Hi, I'm Alan Cross. You may know me as the guy who does the ongoing history of new music. You're listening to CFRC 101.9.
1, 2, 3, 4. Noose round my tried, but she just waved goodbye. She said I'd always be that kind of guy. I wanted to try, but she just waved goodbye. She waved goodbye.
We are the Arcade Fire. You're listening to CFRC.
Satan gave me a taco and it made me really sick. The chicken was all raw and the grease was mighty thick. The rice was all rancid and the beans were so hard. I was getting kinda dizzy, eating all the lard. There was aphids on the lettuce and I ate every one. And after I was done, the salsa melted off my tongue. Pieces of tortilla got stuck in my throat. And the stains on my clothes burned a hole through my coat. My stomach was trembling, I broke out in a rash. I was so dry and thirsty and I didn't have no cash. So I went and found a hose, tore off all my clothes, turned on the water and it shot right up my nose. Some old lady came along and she thought I was a freak. So she beat me with a handbag till I could hardly speak. I was lying there naked, my body badly bruised in a pool of my own blood. Unconscious and confused, when the cops came and got me and threw me in their van. When I woke up on the ceiling and I couldn't find my hand, they took me to the judge, his eyes are glowing red. The courtroom was filled with the witches and the dead. Well, the sheriff was a hellhound with fangs and claws. The prisoners were tied up and chained to the walls. The air was getting thick, the smoke was getting thicker. The judge read the verdict, said cut off his head. But they placed me on the altar and they raised up the axe. My head was about to explode when I noticed the marshal stacks. I noticed all the smoke machines, cameras and lights. Some guy with a microphone running around dancing in tights. And I noticed the crew and the band playing down below. And I realized I was in a rock video. So I went and joined the band. And I went out on tour. And I smoked a lot of heroin. And I passed out in manure. I made out with the groupies. Started
CFRC is active on every social media platform. Check us out at CFRC Radio on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. And on Twitter at CFRC.
When the sun in the morning peeps over the hill and kisses the roses round my windowsill, then my heart fills with glow. and I